Welcome to Season 11, Episode 39 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Tuesday, the 4th of December, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and the community. I'm Mark, and joining me this week are Martin.
Hello, Cockle.
And Alan.
Hello, you.
Martin, what have you been doing recently?
I have been flashing all over the place.
Ooh, Mrs.
Yeah. So
it's a good job it's not a video podcast. With,
eh? it's a good job, yeah. With Christmas approaching, I have put Lineage OS, the aftermarket Android, on a Nexus 4, a Nexus 5, a Nexus 7, a Nexus 9, a Nexus 10, and a Moto Style X.
What's the relevant of Christmas? Are you giving these away as presents?
Well, something like that. I know from experience, Christmas is a time of everyone turning up with smashed and malfunctioning phones, and I have a collection of phones and tablets that I don't primarily need anymore, with the exception of one. So I'm going to go equipped, phones on the hip, that I can support from afar to hand out to family members with broken and knackered phones.
Do you have a long trench coat with lots of internal pockets?
No, but now you've said that, I'm definitely going to get one, and I'm going to sew, you know, like a laminated display pouches into the inside of the coat, and then I can properly flash my phones.
Who's the unlucky person who's getting the Nexus 4?
Well, that one I'm actually going to keep for myself. I'm going to be using that as a SIP phone for my office phone. So just to do hooking into the office SIP stuff, because I keep on having these international calls, which I keep doing on my own phone and running up big bills. So I'm going to use that as a SIP phone.
So the Nexus 4, all the ones I had, have all the batteries have bulged in all of them and smashed the glass backs of them. Has that happened to yours?
No, none of those. None of those Nexus phones. They're all in fine working order.
I left mine on a bus.
I did have an MX4, an Ubuntu phone, that has a big fat pregnant battery, which I have removed and disarmed. And I've got a Pro 5 that seems to be developing early signs of pregnant battery syndrome as well. So that may well have to join the pile of unsafe to use devices. But my BQ Aquarius M10 FHD, I've also flashed to UB port 1604.
Oh, nice.
Cool. Alan, what have you been up to?
I asked the internet if anyone knew of a small display that I could replace on my desk instead of having a laptop on my desk, and move the laptop under the desk and have the display on the desk. And some people came up with lots of different suggestions, some wrong. And eventually I gave up asking and I went and searched on Amazon and I found one. And it was cheap, very cheap. It was £130, which I consider cheap for a display. And I wanted, my specs I wanted was 1080p, lower than 11 inches high, so it fits underneath the existing monitors that are raised up on my desk.
Yeah.
And had an HDMI port, so I could just plug it straight in the laptop. And anything else was really a bit of a bonus. And I got this thing. It's 13.3-inch diagonal. It says 1080p in the description. It's got two HDMI ports, mini HDMI, a headphone port. It's powered by USB. So I don't need an external power adapter. I can actually power it off the laptop. Yeah. It has speakers, and it comes with a little rubbishy stand, but it's good enough. But it means I've got some space back on my desk, because the laptop is now under the desk and the display is on my desk. I've got a proper keyboard as well, which is very loud. That's the maximum amount of noise you hear. I know. I know. The biggest bonus was, it says 1080p in the description, but it's not. It's 1440p. It's higher resolution than it actually says. So I now have a kind of high DPI display.
It is borderline high DPI, that, for the pixel density on that size. Yeah.
Totally. The super handy thing is, it's marketed at gamers and people with like game consoles and stuff. Like, if you want to go over to a friend's house, you could take your console, your controller, and one of these displays, so they don't need to have another big telly. And it's perfect for playing games on. But I've also been using it to plug in Raspberry Pis and try stuff out on Raspberry Pis.
Well, with the second connection, you mean?
Yeah, exactly. And then just press the buttons on the back to switch HDMI ports. It's nice. Fantastic. I love it. It's very nice bargain. Too. I'll put a link in the show notes.
Also, for the benefit of the listeners, Alan has criticised my noisy keyboard for years. I can't believe he's proud of his noisy keyboard now.
That's mine.
Listeners, why don't you send in recordings of your noisy keyboard?
No, and on don't. That note, on with the show. And now it's time for some lovely news. Martin, what do we have in the news this week?
Well, this week I read with interest that Huawei is developing its own mobile OS. And no, this is not a hark back to a story you've already thought you've heard about. So Huawei product VP, Bruce Lee, you cannot make this up, confirmed that an alternative OS to replace Android is under development. And the internet rumour mill suggests that this new operating system will be called Kirin OS. I don't know if that's the correct Chinese pronunciation. And it might be available in summer of 2019. So there's a subsidiary of Huawei called HiSilicon, and they develop the Kirin line of SoCs that Huawei use in their tablets and phones and what have you, and have recently released a 7-nanometer 980 processor that competes with the Snapdragons. So what remains to be seen is, off the back of a story from a couple of weeks ago about a commit that was made to Google Fuchsia's project by Huawei that enabled the Honor Play phone, I think it was, is whether Kirin OS is going to be a whole cloth independent OS or whether it will be based off of Google's Fuchsia. Speculation to ensue, or more speculation to ensue. What do you reckon? I mean, Huawei are obviously like trying to create an ecosystem here. They've got the hardware platform and now they're working on like the OS platform. Are they trying to really take on Android, you reckon?
I don't know. I'm a bit exhausted from new mobile phone OSs. You know, having been involved in one now a few years ago, and it not being a super success, I'm cautious about all new ones, and I should have been cautious about all of them from the start, because you know, the problem is that you can get in your mind that there are two players, they dominate. There are only two phone OSs. They're very dominant, and there is no room for another one. Like, if Microsoft couldn't do it and BlackBerry couldn't do it, no one, and you know, they don't, I don't realize they predate both of them. But if those big players can't do it, who possibly could? And it really does feel like gigantic Chinese companies seem to be the only people who could do this and who have the willing and wherewithal to do it and possibly have market manipulation on their side as their Chinese companies that could make them big in China, which gets them big elsewhere later.
Or they don't even need to be big elsewhere. Well, if you're big in China, that's probably big enough, right?
Right. There are certainly products and services that are big in China that, like, people in the West just don't use and never heard of, for sure.
So do you not think that it's time for another fresh mobile operating system to come to the stage? It's been over a decade since iOS and Android happened. You know, Google are obviously doing something with Fuchsia. We don't quite know what that is just yet. But, you know, is it time for somebody, maybe Huawei, to come along and knock either iOS or Android off its pedestal?
What's the goal, though? Like, it's just another corporation with software that dominates. Like, previously it was Nokia and BlackBerry and Microsoft to some degree. Then it was Apple and Google. In 10, 20 years' time, when we're all in our rocking chairs and looking back, not you, Mark, I know, and we're looking back on this, you know, it might be two other companies, fair enough, but it'll still probably be a duopoly of two companies, whether the incumbents or someone else.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think you're probably right that, you know, if you look at the car industry over time, we started with hundreds and thousands of these car manufacturers, and over the years they've sort of narrowed down, and through acquisitions we've now got, like, you know, half a dozen of these dominant car companies that pretty much control all of car manufacturing globally. And we see that happen very quickly with, you know, mobile phone operating systems. But it is possible someone could unseat, you know, one of the incumbents.
Nothing lasts forever.
Alan, what news did you find?
Well, in our Telegram channel, which you can get to via ubuntupodcast.org/telegram, we're alerted by CHBMB of a Raspberry Pi build of Steam Link.
Woohoo!
Ooh, that's interesting, because
it is.
The box, the Steam Link box itself is being discontinued, isn't it?
Yes. So we mentioned this previously, that for those not aware, Steam Link was a hardware solution that you put underneath your TV in one room in the house, attach some controllers, plug it into the telly, and then stream games from a beefier computer somewhere else in your house. That's the typical use case. Sit in front of the telly, play games, while the gaming PC is somewhere else, like in your office or den, which is exactly the way I use it. And it's great. I love the Steam Link. And actually, one of my predictions last year was that Valve would rev the Steam Link, but what they did was kill it. And so the Steam Link was killed, but at the same time, they created an Android app called Steam Link, which you can install on your Android phone and do the same kind of thing. You can pair a controller with it and stream games from your beefy computer on your phone, which is or tablet, which is great. But what they've now done is port that same software across to the Raspberry Pi. There's a deb you can download, which is, as with all things Steam, is a stub that then goes off and gets the full software update from their server, installs it, and you run it. And sure enough, you get a window, well, full screen environment, which is familiar if you've ever used Steam Link app on Android. Mm-hmm. You associate it with a Steam machine somewhere in your house, and then you get the big screen interface. What's it called?
Big picture mode.
Big picture mode interface when you connect. And then you can plug a controller into your Raspberry Pi and play games streamed from a big PC.
Ooh. This is great on so many different levels. The first is that Steam seem to have coordinated a we're ending a device and a replacement announcement in fairly short order, which is uncharacteristic and encouraging.
Yeah.
The other is, so personally, this is great because now all of us enthusiasts and DIYers and makers can go off and make our own Steam Links. And I envisage Etsy will soon be littered with Steam Link cases for your Raspberry Pi.
Yes.
But I wonder if Steam are hoping that third parties will create sort of pseudo-official Steam Links based on the Raspberry Pi, possibly even the Pi compute module, and sort of push that manufacturing aspect off to other parties.
Well, it would certainly be interesting if it was ported to other SoCs, because one of the downsides of the Raspberry Pi is the network hangs off the USB bus. And one of the things you really want is high bandwidth for bringing down that H.264 stream of video data and sending your controller input back to the main PC. And that bus is somewhat slow on the Raspberry Pi. So maybe the next generation of Raspberry Pi that the Pi Foundation have alluded to will fix this problem. But it's certainly a problem for the Steam Link software on a Raspberry Pi is the, and it may not be a massive problem for some games. Like there's only certain classes of games where you really want, you know, super high quality streaming and you don't want any artifacts and you don't want any glitching, but it's certainly a problem with, I tried it out here and, it's certainly beta quality software. It's got room to improve.
Right.
But it was surprisingly easy. I just plugged an Xbox 360 controller in, launched it, had it plugged into my new funky 13-inch display, and there I was playing a game streamed from another computer in the house. It was pretty funky.
Brilliant.
Do you have a Steam controller?
I do. I didn't try pairing that. No, I didn't try pairing that. And I don't think it. There are some other limitations with it as well, in that it can't manage the hardware in the device very well, so it isn't able to do the same kind of fine-grained control of the network and Bluetooth stack yet, but it might be able to in the future.
Okay. I've been able to pair the Steam controller with the Steam Link Android app.
Yes, because that uses Bluetooth, doesn't it? So I'm wondering if you can use the Raspberry Pi's Bluetooth or plug in the dongle and do it that way, or both.
I think you probably can. I just didn't try it because I saw in the, there's a Steam community page where people can provide feedback. And I saw people have provided feedback and I thought, well, the easiest thing for me to do is just, and actually to hand the nearest controller I had was an Xbox 360 wired controller. So I just plugged it in and it just worked. So I thought, well, that's a good enough test for now.
My other hope is that the Steam Link hardware devices were based on ARM SoCs. So my hope is that, you know, the software is similar enough that there will be longevity of support of the existing Steam Link devices for those people that have got them.
Yeah. Cool. And finally in the news this week, Fortnite and Unreal developer Epic Games are launching their own digital store.
Huh.
So this is a store for selling games to compete with platforms like Steam. But the big USP of this platform is that instead of keeping 30% of the revenue, which is pretty much standard for Steam and iOS and Google Play and places like that, they're keeping just 12% of the revenue, with the rest going to the game developers.
Interesting. So this isn't a store for their own software. This is for other publishers to piggyback on the back of.
It sounds like it, yes. Well, I expect they'll be selling their own software as well.
Well, I'm sure, yeah.
Yes. Obviously, they get to keep all the money if they're selling their software.
Everyone seems to be doing this. Discord has now integrated a store inside the Discord chat application to compete with Steam. And they have a subscription service where you can pay and you get access to a bunch of games rather than you individually buying games, which you can still do. But you could do subscription services within Discord. So it's interesting that a number of these companies are breaking away. You know, a lot of people saw Valve as the vanguard for digital sales of games that was not via the native stores like the Microsoft Store and the Apple Store, but it was an independent. But now people are, you know, I know that Fortnite is not available on Steam, and you have to use the Epic Games launcher, and there are other games that use their own launchers and their own stores. It's interesting that the tide is turning against Valve now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm torn about whether I think this is, you know, good or not, because on the one hand, Valve has basically just become the bony game in town. Pardon the pun. You know, everything comes. You know, if you want to do game sales, you do them through
at
Steam.
Volume. Yes.
Yeah. Exactly. Like that's you know, it's. It means PC gaming, Steam. Mm. You know, if you're a PC gamer, you're a Steam gamer.
But then there's also, you know, GOG and itch.io, which are both very popular among specific niches. Like GOG is very popular for, you know, older games, but also the DRM-free stuff, and itch.io similarly. And itch.io is popular with developers because you can set your own percentage. So it's not a case of 30% or 12%. You can set it to whatever you like.
Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely good to have the competition and you know, have places like GOG that are diversifying on the basis of DRM freeness. But also, from a Linux gamer's point of view, Valve have done so much for Linux gaming that, you know, I'm not sure that the Epic Games Store is going to offer the same support for Linux gaming that, you know, I mean, Unreal Engine games, some of them run on Linux, but... You know, are they going to make Linux a first-class citizen in their store? Is that of interest to them in the same way it's of interest to Valve?
Indeed. I mean, for example, Fortnite, I think, has worked on Linux for approximately 7 minutes this year.
Right. And that was through Wine.
It wasn't through various native hacks. Yeah. Now, I don't remember the precise details, but I saw Steam announce fairly recently that they're changing their pricing schedules for sort of volume sellers. I wonder if that is to sort of, you know, counter this.
But then if it's only for volume sellers, it's not going to counter it for perhaps indie developers who might be more interested in keeping a larger portion of a smaller pie.
Indeed, because you can't tell at the point which you publish your game whether or not, as an indie publisher, you've got the next big hotness on your hands until, you know, after that happens.
But volume does apply to Epic, so if the people you're trying to appease are Epic, then yes, that then could help them.
Yes.
Mm.
Right. Well, I think we better get on with the rest of the show. And now we have some community news and events. Martin, what's up first?
So, Zubuntu have announced that they are going to stop producing the 32-bit Intel ISOs beginning with Zubuntu 1904. So that basically means Ubuntu 18.10 was the last release where you can download an ISO for 32-bit Intel. Their team had a vote, and I think it was a 6-10 in favour vote of dropping the 32-bit images.
Sorry, 6-10? How does that
yes,
work?
I believe so. Six people voted to drop the 32-bit ISOs.
Ten people voted to drop them.
Yeah.
Six voted to keep them.
Sorry, six. Yeah, six. Six of the 10 votes. Sorry.
Oh, six of the 10. Six versus 10.
No, six of the 10.
Glad we cleared that up.
Yes, so, good point. Well
so
made.
So, Ubuntu is the only flavor now that still does 32-bit images.
I believe. Yeah, I'm not sure if Ubuntu Studio offer 32-bit or not, but considering that they're built on top of Zubuntu, I suspect they will be stopping if they haven't already. Mm. And Lubuntu are also considering their options, so we'll have to watch this space in terms of what they're going to be doing. Mm.
Next up, Snapcraft 3.0 has been released to the stable channel in the store, and there's a big set of release notes. This was quite a bit of work for Sergio and the Snapcraft team to get out the door, because there's a lot of significant changes in Snapcraft. And for those who don't know, Snapcraft is the tool used to create snaps. So anyone who creates snaps probably uses Snapcraft, and there are a lot of changes in here, so it's worth taking a look. One of the significant changes is it's defaulting to using multipass to build snaps. So when you try and build a snap, it will stand up a clean VM using multipass, and inside that VM, it will do all the building and then pull the snap out at the end. So you end up with a nice clean environment in which the snap was built. So you don't get any random PPAs or other libraries from your host machine bundled into the snap. It makes it a nice, easily reproducible and clean build, which is good. Loads of other stuff in there. Worth a look if you're interested in building snaps.
Cool. Next up, there's a status update on the Ubuntu community forums about Nautilus 3.30.
Mm.
So this is sort of restoring or replacing a feature which was removed in 3.28, which is where Nautilus provides the desktop. So the contents of your desktop folder is displayed on your actual desktop. That feature was removed in 3.28 with a view to it being replaced by a GNOME shell extension. So does that mean that it's now been put back into 3.30, or is it a separately packaged extension?
Yeah, that's right. So what the desktop team are working on here is taking Nautilus 3.30 and bundling up the package for the GNOME shell extension that now provides the desktop support. So this is the ability to have icons on your desktop and folders on your desktop and all of that good stuff. Yeah. And then having those two things work together in order that you have, you know, the continuation of those features, because the Ubuntu desktop team wanted to keep that desktop integration, which is why they've been holding on to Nautilus 3.26, which was the last release that had that capability. And they've now announced that there's a PPA available, which includes packages for Nautilus 3.30 and the GNOME extension. So for people that want to test Ubuntu 19.04, that's the Disco Dingo, in a VM, you can add that PPA and you can try this new stuff out and send your feedback via the Ubuntu discourse.
What, no snap?
No, because this isn't currently a snapped thing.
Okay. What's been happening next, Martin?
Well, in Mir is Not Dead news, William Wald, Mir developer, has posted a video that illustrates the progress he's been making on integrating Mir with the Mate panel. So these are the first baby steps towards the Mate desktop environment, supporting Wayland and using Mir as the means by which it does that. So the patches that he has won't be in the Mir 1.1 release, and neither will they feature in the next Mate desktop release. So these are both pull requests that are sitting there under review at the moment, but they will get merged after both Mir and the next Mate desktop get released.
So this would mean that you could use Mate instead of egg mode if you wanted a Mir desktop.
Indeed, it could, yes. But it also means that, you know, Mate now has options into the future in, with regards to, you know, display server technologies.
Yeah.
I watched the video and it just looks like a normal desktop. I mean, okay, it looks pretty basic and...
thank you.
It's, yeah. but it, you know, it looks like it's functioning within normal operating parameters. It's,
yeah. I mean, we saw a version of this... in September this year, I think. Was that right?
Yeah, it looked like a janky mess
then. Yeah, and it's certainly come on an awful long way in that I don't think you could tell apart like the X11 implementation from the Wayland implementation of the panel now. And definitely the panel is the toughest thing to get Wayland compatible. And by doing the work for Mate panel, it means that then all of the pieces will be in place to do the rest of the desktop environment.
Hmm.
With the exclusion of like the window manager, because it'll actually use Mir as the compositor in this brave new world. But in other news, Alan Griffiths posted some updates and he announced that the NVIDIA driver support that we talked about a few weeks ago has now been merged. So that's all now in upstream Mir. So that means you can use the proprietary NVIDIA drivers with Mir as a means to have Wayland support.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. That's pretty cool.
Isn't that cool, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Egg Mode, as it's now known, the snap of Egg Mode now works on Arch and Fedora and also includes experimental X11 support. So it's now possible to run X applications inside the example Mir desktop. And that initial X11 support was contributed by Marius Gripsgaard from the UBports team.
Yay.
Yay, go UBports. And the Mir team have sort of put out a call for interest here. They're saying that this could be an opportunity for interested developers to get involved in this work. It's all self-contained within the Mir code base. And in 2019, both UBports with the Unity 8 desktop and the Mir team's work on continuing the integration with Mate will need this X11 compatibility feature to work well. Mm-hmm. So if you are a developer that is well versed in X11 and Wayland and compositors, then head to the Ubuntu discourse in the Mir category and let them know if you want to get involved.
If you're not already well versed but you want to learn, is this also a good time to jump on board?
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. Right, Alan, we've got one more thing in the community news.
Yeah, very briefly, Colin King has announced a new version of a piece of software he maintains called Forkstat. And his stuff is all very complicated and I don't understand a lot of it. But this one looked interesting to me because it's an interesting tool that helps you debug situations that are normally hard to spot with other tools like Top or HTOP, if you must, and PS, where events happen around processes really quickly, like a process might change its name or appear and then die before it refreshes in the screen, like Top and PS. And so it's good for spotting situations where process names change or they die or, you know, various situations where processes fork, hence the name Forkstat. But the thing that I thought was quite cute was he's added UTF-8 glyphs, making it easier to see where a process has changed name or where it's died. And when a process dies, he uses a little skull and crossbones to show the process has died, which I thought was quite nice. And a little arrow in a circle that makes it look like the process has restarted and stuff. And I quite like that. I like the idea of people making console applications look prettier with the use of these additional UTF-8 glyphs and emoji and that kind of stuff. So well done, Colin.
Excellent. And finally, we have an event. FOSDEM 19 is happening from the 3rd and the going backwards 2nd and the 3rd of February 2019 in Brussels, Belgium. FOSDEM is a free software event for a free event for software developers to meet, share ideas, and collaborate. And it's massive and crazy and very enjoyable.
Yeah. It's difficult to get into some of the rooms. It's so busy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, book early to avoid disappointment and arrive early at rooms. I heard people talking about arriving into rooms like two sessions before they won, they actually want to go to because they're so busy. So some people have said they're going to stay at home and just watch the stream rather than go.
It does depend on which tracks you're interested in. Some of them, yeah, have queues out the door. But yes, if you go with some friends, then you can always just hang out and meet up with people and enjoy the atmosphere. And yeah, they all tend to be live streamed, so you could, you know, sit nearby and watch it over the Wi-Fi if you can't get into a particular room. Yes, and I think that's all we have in the community news and events.
Are you an alternative freedom hater? Thought so. We know you lot love Overcast. Cleanse your soul by giving each show a freedom-loving thumbs up in the app.
And that's all for episode 39. So we will be back next week when we will be looking at what happened over the past 12 months. Yes.
It was a big year. It was almost as big as some of the previous years, yes.
Yes. Although not as big as a leap year.